Hi, I'm Diana, and I'm sitting here with managing partner Sandra Ziskin and Toronto Police Officer Sean Shapiro. Thanks for coming.
Pleasure.
We really appreciate you being here, to be honest, having your knowledge and expertise in areas that are very important to me personally.
Well, it's all about you. No, it's all about you, Diana. Let's make sure we get that correct.
This is true. Yes. And that's why this topic today, I wanted to discuss pedestrians and cyclists. Are they ever at fault for a car accident?
Yes.
Is that the short answer?
That's the short answer. The short answer. I'm going to let Sean speak because he's the expert.
Can I explain the scenario to you? I'm literally crossing at Queen and whatever. I'm waiting to make a right-hand turn. There's one guy. The light's ticking, and I'm like, I have so much time with this green that I can make it. But he is involved in his phone,
yeah,
walking like a snail. And I'm like, come on, bud. Like, you're not the only one here.
There's a lot to unpack with what you just said. But at the end of the day, pedestrians are responsible for their part to play in a collision, just as a cyclist would be or a motor vehicle operator, driver. They call them drivers. Mm-hmm. If you do something that's breaking the law, you're responsible for your part in it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's rules to the road to keep everybody doing the right thing. But if someone zigs when they should have zagged and they do something that causes the collision, they're the catalyst, even though they're the most injured person. It's the person who is responsible.
That being said, pedestrians and bikes are one of the only people under for motor vehicle accident purposes where there's a reverse onus. So usually it's, as we know, innocent until proven guilty under the law.
Yeah.
When you hit a pedestrian, you're guilty until proven innocent. It's a reverse onus thing in the accident world. Mm-hmm. So if you're hitting a pedestrian or a bicyclist is still considered a pedestrian under the law, you are presumed guilty and at fault until proven otherwise, until proven that the pedestrian or the bicyclist didn't do their job.
Unless Shapiro comes by and charges them, right? You can charge them.
That's the thing. We'll look at the evidence. We'll look at what we can find. And with the joy of video evidence being so plentiful, mm-hmm. We'll charge everybody for their role in the accident. So we don't really deal with who's at fault. We deal with the events that took place that we can prove based on physical evidence and testimony of the witnesses. Mm-hmm. And from there, courts and lawyers argue about really fault and who pays what. That's not our department. Our department is someone stepped in and didn't yield to a pedestrian, we charge them. If the person was unlawfully in the road and caused the collision, we'll charge them. Everyone gets their ticket and then they go deal with it afterwards.
So you've done that. You've definitely charged a pedestrian before.
I had a woman who crossed the street illegally.
Jaywalking.
Well, jaywalking isn't a charge, but they got into the street within 50 meters of a signalized intersection, mm-hmm. and basically ran through traffic until someone hit her. And she ended up being in hospital and quite severely injured. And I served her with a ticket because the guy who was in a collision with her, mm-hmm. was mortified. His vehicle was damaged, but he didn't do anything wrong at all whatsoever. That's a situation where a pedestrian or a cyclist should be held responsible. Now, I can't speak to what happens in court afterwards.
Right.
But in from the case, the way it came to me, that I investigated, she was absolutely the catalyst in that situation.
And then you get handed that?
So then I have to look at different factors than what Sean looks at.
The pedestrian in this case, let's say.
Okay, so exactly. So the pedestrian comes to me, they're crossing illegally, so there's definitely contributory negligence. It doesn't mean they're fully responsible for the accident. So I look at things differently. So Sean has to look at things as black and white, wrong or no wrong. You broke the law or you didn't. It's not always cut and dry. There's definitely degrees of gray, but I have way more gray because then I can portion off responsibility. So you don't have to be 100% at fault. You can be 75 or 25. Uh-huh. So things I would look for in that particular case is, okay, so the pedestrian crossed. Where was she in the roadway? Did she just step off and the vehicle didn't have a chance to go around her? Mm-hmm. Was she in the middle already where he might have seen her from a distance and at least slowed down? These are the things I'm asking myself. Is it a 50-50? Is it a 75-25? And if the injuries are sufficient enough, I will proceed with a lawsuit based on even 25% at fault.
But then what kind of recourse does the driver have against the... Sean says, listen, it was her, like, she started it.
Correct.
Her fault. And then let's say in the case of a driver comes to you, says, listen, I have all this PTSD from what just happened. I literally smoked a person because they jumped out in the middle of the road.
I've had cases like that. And yes, you can sue. You can absolutely sue.
Most of the time, these pedestrians, I'm assuming, don't have auto insurance or anything like that nature. So you're just going to go to help out this driver.
So that gets into a whole finding insurance thing, but there's always insurance. In Ontario, there's always insurance. There's always some place to get insurance. Uh-huh. there's degrees of, I mean, that's a whole other conversation of the insurance companies basically got together and said, this is the order we're going to go on. So if you don't have, yeah, if you don't have it, then this person will have it. And then who will respond? That's basically the order. And I'm not going to make everyone's brain explode with going through that. But certainly they can, the driver can sue the pedestrian for causing psychological harm or psychological damage to them. There's no question.
But from our perspective, we're not worried about that. That's not coming into play. Mm-hmm. We're just talking about the events that took place mm-hmm. and what we can speak to based on what we see.
Hard evidence, if you will. Okay. I'll put pedestrians aside for a second. Let's talk about cyclists because we got to talk about that. And I'm going to tell you why we're going to talk about
that. I'm looking forward to this.
Because, okay. So, okay. I'm driving southbound on whatever lane.
It's always about Diana. It's We're always going back to Diana. Yes, go ahead. It's
back right here. Sandra, pay attention.
Okay, sorry.
So, essentially, when I reach a red light, if I'm in my vehicle and there's a cyclist in their vehicle, because they think that their car's on the road or they are in their designated bike lane or what have you, they don't stop for the red. They just keep going with the crosswalk.
So I want to say that cyclists are, many cyclists are fantastic human beings who do everything right. And then there's a small element of them who choose to make their own rules.
That drive around Diana in particular.
I think that's specifically what changes their category. So some of them want to be pedestrians when they want to be pedestrians, cyclists when they want to be cyclists, and motor vehicles or vehicles when they want to be, depending on what benefit they're looking at utilizing. So you can't cross a crosswalk as a cyclist. That's a pedestrian crosswalk, not a cyclist.
Sorry to interrupt. Are they supposed to dismount their bicycle?
They absolutely should. And they can't ride beside it to cross to run the red light. They're a vehicle. They're responsible for staying with the red light and moving with motor vehicle traffic. So the funny thing is that they are advocating for something called an Idaho stop. They'd like a stop sign to be a yield sign and a red light to be a stop sign for them, but not for everybody else. And that may work in Idaho, but it doesn't work here.
Well, this is something they actually have.
It's a thing that's commonly referred, and other states may claim it's theirs.
I feel like Idaho is just open road all the time. I don't think there's much city dwelling.
Hence why it's probably easier to do this and less dangerous to do it in Idaho.
But we scrape people off the ground all the time that the Idaho didn't work so well. For.
Yes,
it's the reality. Reality is that people get hurt all the time.
Yes.
They may do things 99 times out of 100 and get away with it. And then that last shot, it doesn't go so well. Yeah. And then the motorist is a bad person for hitting them. And they may be responsible partially. Right. But you can do things to make your day safer. And we want everybody to do the safest thing they can for themselves and for everybody else.
Okay, so they have
I'm going to say it. One of the things they need to do, and I will say it because I also have seen people scraped off the ground as you have, is helmets. Helmets are so important. They're just so important. I can't stress it enough because it really, I've seen helmets, car seats, these sort of things. I have seen everything as probably you have. Mm-hmm. And I've seen helmets, sometimes it won't. Sometimes it won't, but a lot of times it can prevent a lot of damage.
So I can tell you that the chief received a letter from a particular group who was upset that I said wear a helmet.
Right.
And they said it's that I'm giving improper information. Helmets do not reduce collisions. And it's true, they don't.
No.
They reduce the chance of head injury and brain damage. And that's a pretty important thing because you don't do very much if your computer doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean your laptop. I mean the one in here.
100%.
So we want everyone to wear a helmet regardless if it's legally required or not. Now, if you're under the age of 18, it's legally required for use while operating a bicycle. E-bikes, it's for everyone who's riding them. But even if you're not legally required to, because you're 18 on a bicycle, wear it. Because other than ruining your do, you can only have benefit from wearing it.
Nobody's crazier about their hair than me. And Diana can tell you that true. And I always, when I go bike riding with my daughter, I always wear the helmet. Because in a low impact...
I need a photo of that.
Oh, it's so bad. We're not publishing that anywhere. In a low impact collision especially... a high impact, it may not have a difference because a high impact, you might just die because of the high impact. Sure. If it's pedestrian versus car, and cars are, what is it, 3,000, 4,000, 6,000 tons. So you just, it's a lot. But it certainly in a medium to low impact collision, it's stopping your head from hitting concrete. Right.
It's absorbing the impact. It's reducing the amount of energy transferred to your brain.
Correct.
And what many people say, especially the bicycling advocate groups who yell at me. Well, they say that
you.
Maybe in a really strange way. But in any case, you know, they say, well, if that's the case, then pedestrians should wear helmets too. And the truth is they should. Right. If you want to reduce your chances of injury as a pedestrian, wear a helmet. You're just reducing.
But this is the argument. This is where I don't understand their argument. Because if you are on the same, a pedestrian is walking on a sidewalk. And if I'm not mistaken, in the city of Toronto, you have to ride your bicycle in the roadway.
If you are 14 or older, you must be on the road. If you are 13 or younger, you can be on the sidewalk. In the city of Toronto, it's a bylaw thing. It depends on where you are.
Oh my God, I'm a quick story, side story. I went on Bathurst Street once. My friend got a new bicycle. I'm like, cool. I started riding on the bike on the road and I was like, nope. And I immediately went to the sidewalk and everybody was screaming all kinds of mean things to me. And I could not care less because I was like, I'm not going on that road ever again.
And you may choose to take the $100 ticket or whatever it is.
It's worth $100.
You know, and I feel for parents of young children whose children can be on the sidewalk, but the parents who are busy trying to keep them safe for all the other reasons you need to be right. with your kids, you know, they want to be on the sidewalk too. Not legal, but I understand why they might break the law. We have a big problem with delivery drivers and being on the sidewalk,
right.
yeah. Especially those carrying big packs who are going to the store to pick up their Uber
and stuff. Yeah.
And I get it, they're trying to make money, but you can't. You can't take up the only space that pedestrians have available to them.
Right.
We have people on wheelchairs. Like, there's so many people who need protected spaces.
That whole argument, pedestrians versus cyclists, like, are they a motor vehicle or not?
They're a vehicle, not a motor vehicle. Okay. If you're talking about an e-bike, it's a vehicle because it's really a motor vehicle that through legislation has all the benefits of being a bicycle because it conforms. It can't go more than 32 kilometers an hour on the surface.
Right, so you're supposed to
vote that. Yeah, I talk about it all the time. Yeah. 32K, no more than 500 watt motor, no more than 120 kilos, functioning pedals, wearing a helmet at 16 or older. Mm-hmm. Those things make it a bicycle benefit. But as soon as it breaks that, people modify these things and go 80 kilometers an hour and they don't have license, ownership, and insurance.
It's problematic. And there's been a lot, I've seen an uptake in e-bike accidents through the roof. We get a ton of those. It never used to be like it was a wasteland with it.
The scooter ones?
Yeah. And they get involved with motor vehicles.
Well, e-kick scooters are a different thing. They can only go 24 kilometers an hour, but they have similar rules. But they're motor vehicles if they break the law and are outside of those routines. And they're not even allowed in the city of Toronto at all.
Okay.
But we see people do horrible things and at very high speeds. And going back to, two things. Going back to our last episode, we talked about impaired driving. That's a motor vehicle under the Criminal Code of Canada.
You can get drunk cycling, it's not allowed?
E-bike or e-kick scooter electric unicycle, electric skateboard. Those are motor vehicles according to the Criminal Code of Canada, which means that's a DUI eligible. But we were also talking about cyclists and helmets. So very often they say, well, cyclists don't kill people. Mm-hmm. Well, cyclists sometimes do kill people. Right. And last year, a cyclist struck another cyclist and killed that person.
Oh, my God.
Well, a collision's a collision, right? And it's high speed, so you're going into each other. You have to be, everyone has to share the roadway and be safe.
So I don't know if you were involved in that. So was anyone charged in that? Can a cyclist, I guess it goes back to my overall question, can a cyclist be charged in an accident with another vehicle or electric vehicle or motor vehicle?
So there are charges under the HTA that apply to all vehicles, and there are some that only apply to motor vehicles. Okay. For instance, speeding. Speeding does not apply to a bicycle.
Right.
Unfortunately, because we have lots of cyclists who do dangerous things at high speed, but careless driving would apply. So depending on what you're doing, the appropriate charge can be lit.
Interesting enough.
Sadly, cell phone charges, distracted driving doesn't apply to cyclists, but careless does.
So a cyclist, okay, let's run a scenario here.
But they can be charged they can be distracted and charged with careless driving, just not the distracted driving charge.
What?
Law is a wonderful thing.
So careless driving is one of the most, I would say, severe charges under the HTA, Highway Traffic Act, right? Like one of the highest. Yes. Mm-hmm. So, and it's one of those things where it gives the officers a lot of leeway on how to apply it. So,
got it.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Okay, so here's a scenario already. There's a cyclist who is distracted driving.
Okay.
Distracted driving. Collides with a vehicle. There's injuries that happen. Let's say it goes through the windshield. The driver is injured. The cyclist is also injured. You arrive at the scene and you obviously do the whole rebuilding thing, trying to figure out what happened. And you realize the cyclist was distracted and therefore caused this accident to happen.
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to lay a charge for distracted driving, which really deals only with a handheld communication device, handheld entertainment device. Right. You know, you're playing your Nintendo Game Boy.
Right.
So I'm dating myself.
Right.
Or watching a screen. That would be distracted driving under the HTA that a motorist could be charged with.
Okay.
But as a cyclist, not eligible. But careless driving would apply.
Careless driving.
That's driving without undue care and control.
Okay.
Which is absolutely the charge that we would have laid prior to the development of distracted driving.
And then Sandra, what? Who are you going to sue? Same thing. I guess it's about the finding the insurance part, right?
So no, it's not the insurance. At that point, with a careless driving charge, more often than not, it's not one of those ones where we would where there's a big split on liability. Careless driving is such a prominent charge that once we usually see those on a police report, we know that not only do we think the officer thinks that person is really at fault.
Yeah, just like, wait,
it's,
what?
It's, yeah, we know that it's probably 100%. In Highway Traffic Act cases, police officer and their testimony is, it's different from a criminal court where you see they try to impeach their testimony or make them look not credible or make them look biased. In a Highway Traffic Act situation, when we get the officers on the stand, the jury is more often than not on a civil case are like, why would they lie? There's literally nothing in it for them to lie about a bicycle. So when an officer gets on the stand and says, listen, I charge them with careless because they were distracted on the, and you know you're going to lose.
I got a bunch of witnesses.
Yeah, yeah. And a police officer's testimony in those cases is really, it's, you don't get purer than that in a Highway Traffic Act. So I know if an officer charged somebody with careless, I'm not going forward with a tort claim at that point.
Well, looks like pedestrians and cyclists aren't off the hook.
Depends. It's my favorite word.
Yeah, you love it. The depends.
It's not just a diaper.
It's all fact specific. But oftentimes I'll say this, and I don't know if you find this as well. It's usually a myriad of things. It's not one thing. Mm-hmm. It does happen oftentimes that when it comes to pedestrian and cyclist, there is, like, I've had ones where pedestrians just standing there, the motor vehicle loses control and hits them into the guardrail.
Well,
there's nothing they can do. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes it's some sort of together thing. One's not looking, the other one's not looking, nobody's paying attention. And the idea is to stay alert
at all times.
I like to say that traffic safety is a shared responsibility, which really aggravates a lot of people.
Right.
Because they say, well, if I'm just walking down the street, you know, what's it my responsibility? Because you have to assume, like, if you look around at the people who are driving and they're not driving, the average person is on their phone.
Yes.
Playing with something. They're not focused on being safe.
Right.
So it's your responsibility now to expect the unexpected from them.
Correct.
And that's where your responsibility comes in. Because if you are putting your life in someone else's hands, you're asking for problems.
I agree.
I guess at the end of the day, as the person driving the 6-ton vehicle or whatever, you should probably be paying most attention for that reason alone. I just always wondered, because I do see it a lot when I'm driving in the depths of the city. I do see a lot of that distracted stuff coming from the pedestrians and cyclists. And I always wondered, what's the recourse for a driver who's literally just driving according to the rules, and everyone's going willy-nilly?
Something that we completely, and you just triggered a thought. So something we went way, way away from. Driving in the city of Toronto, and someone's just waiting to make a left turn, and 6 people just cross the street, and they're almost off the road.
Yeah.
And then 3 more people step off, because we've lost something, the common courtesy of look both ways. I walk my kids to school. It's not very far to get them to school.
Right.
And drivers are shocked that I stop and I wait and I say, are you going?
Yeah.
My turn. Let's have a conversation.
Well,
I want to make sure I give these cars that have been stuck with 25 kids crossing the street an opportunity to get to work today.
Right.
Because otherwise they're stuck until the bell goes. So there's courtesy. Not everybody gives it, but I like to. And it would be a lot better for downtown traffic if we all did.
I thought I saw a new rule that said that you can get pulled over if you don't let them cross fully. If you're making a turn, is that
so? We're talking about signalized intersections versus pedestrian crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
Signalized intersections are quite literally everything you see everywhere in the city,
right.
Where there's a traffic lights and it's automatic control or stop sign control. If there's someone crossing at a crosswalk there, once they've passed your half of the road, you're no longer at risk of failing to yield to them.
So half of the road.
It's when they're lawfully on the road, not when they're sitting having a conversation about what they're going to have for breakfast, but they're lawfully in the roadway, in the crosswalk. Now you're obligated to yield to them, wait until they pass safely. And at that point, you can continue with your turn or driving straight through or whatever you're dealing with.
Right.
If there's a crossing guard present, you must wait until they're entirely off the road. That's off the other side as well.
Absolutely lose their minds the other day.
They should have lightsabers attached to their...
Right.
He literally, like, hit the front of the hood of a car.
Oh, that's a little excessive.
Yeah, he he was, no, because I think it was a high dense area. There's kids crossing. It's, the guy was kind of inching. He was at fault. That person was totally at fault for what they did.
If you have something called a PXO, pedestrian crossover, mm-hmm. it's not in relation to any kind of signalized intersection or crossing walk. It's a crosswalk where there's no intersection, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
It's got lighting, PXO, cross signs. That's going to be a situation where, regardless of a crossing guard is there, mm-hmm. you're obligated to wait until every person is off the roadway.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Until the light. I usually wait till the lights stop flashing.
Person on the roadway. You don't have to wait until the lights.
Such
person.
A good driver.
You know what, though? I watch people just running through them all day long. They don't even slow down. So they figure pedestrians going the other way, they're fool. They're fools, too. But
They're fools and they're cool. They're cool fools, yes.
Okay, finally, the last one that could potentially be at fault.
Yes.
The passenger in your vehicle.
Passenger in the vehicle doesn't have responsibility for the operation of the vehicle. So they're responsible for wearing a seatbelt. They're responsible when it comes to open alcohol. They can be charged under the Liquor License Act. But in terms of operating the vehicle, what part are they playing?
What if you're like driving through the city and they're like, I hate you. And you're like, get off of me.
That's a whole different ball of wax.
Diana, did this happen?
It did not. We're talking about.
Even the movies. I'm all referencing movies. They're all movies ideas.
You're talking about potential assault, dealing with someone who's under the influence of drugs or alcohol in crisis. But you're operating that motor vehicle. At the first sign of this is going to be a problem,
Pull over.
Take yourself out of the game, because if you decide, or if you continue and figure you're just going to ignore it and it turns into something that escalates and you hit something, you're still responsible as a driver.
Right.
Maybe. 100%. I've had situations where passengers have grabbed the wheel, and usually in anger. Usually in anger. They're fighting. It's usually a couple, usually fighting.
Or they push their leg. But we have sued. Or they do something crazy like that.
Yeah, we do sue. We do sue passengers in that case. Uh-huh. From a civil point of view, we will sue them. If they interfere with the driver, absolutely, we will sue them.
Wow. But from a police perspective, we can only go after the driver for what's done. If you say you had a whole thing that happened in the car, we have no way of determining that and proving that without having video evidence. And even then, the driving portion is still your responsibility.
It's just like, oh, this person was going crazy. Maybe we need to cut this later, Greg. But what about in the case where people are being intimate while driving? Is that a thing?
Again, Diana, this is last night. Do we need to talk about this?
I was watching Culture Time by myself.
We get a lot of questions about a lot of things.
Entirely obvious. I'm curious, because that actually happened once. I remember opening up a file and being like, oh. And then I was like, it just closed. And I was like, I don't know. That's not my problem. I'm not the lawyer on file.
No, but again, what Sean is saying is correct. So if you want to do something sexual.
Yeah.
That's distracting from what you're doing.
I would say it's careless operation.
Yes. So you need to pull over.
Driver's careless.
The driver's careless. Pull over.
Take care of business.
Finish whatever you need to finish.
Okay.
And then continue on with your way.
And here's something to really put some, I don't know how to say this nicely. Well, so I won't. I'll skip it. Yeah. We're going to say that airbags deploy at 200 miles per hour. Uh-huh. That's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
That can be very, very serious.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You could break your neck and you could die. Don't do it.
Or you could lose an appendage.
Well, you have people. We're older. You have a room. Do it in a room.
You can afford
it's
it.
It's enough.
What a fantastic episode. I feel like all my questions were answered. Cyclists, pedestrians, you heard it from the two over here. You could potentially be at fault in the case of distracted, walking, operating of a bicycle, etc. Be careful out there. That's always the main message. Also, we came to find out, passengers, as long as you're operating the vehicle, you are 1000% responsible for what happens in and around that vehicle. Be alert, everybody. Be safe. Thanks again, guys.
Thanks.